I'm here in Lisnisky and I'm talking to Eric Glass. Eric, are you from Lisnisky or were you always?
No, I'm from beside Rosslea, actually up a place called Derrynewilt.
Okay, and did you grow up there?
I grew up there and went to Aldermsey Primary School from there.
And your background, Eric, your father, what was he doing for a living?
My father worked for the, at that time it was the county council. He worked in Taylor Woods factory for years and then he left and went to Fermanagh County Council at that time.
Yeah.
And worked for them.
And what was it like growing up there at that time? You were born in what year?
I was born in 1942.
So what was it like in the 40s and 50s?
Oh, it was great. You could come and go where you like, and it was great at that time. You know, I really had a good upcoming, really loved it. So I did.
And did you have many brothers and sisters?
I had just one brother. So I had.
Yeah. And what did he do?
He worked at the... He was a fire officer at the hospital. So he was...
Were you born into the Church of Ireland or
yes,
what tradition were you?
Church of Ireland.
Yeah,
Church of Ireland.
And the so kind of growing up in a comfortable, normal atmosphere,
yes, uh-huh.
What was to come, of course, was dreadful.
It was awful then.
Yeah. But talk me into that now. What did you do when you left school?
After I left school, I worked in this ski here in the factory.
What doing?
And working in the, it was the English Sewing Cotton Company. I worked there for years. And then I got married in 64. I got married. And I moved from Derrynewilt over to we place Maharvili. And I lived there in a labourer's cottage until 1973. And then I moved house then.
Okay.
I had, in 1972, a very close friend of mine that lived just down the road from me, he was shot going into the house.
What was his name?
He was Harry Creighton.
Was he a member of the UDR?
He was a member of the UDR.
UDR.
Uh-huh. And he was shot going in home. And then after that, the army moved in beside me. They got some sort of a thing that it was going to happen to me, and they stayed with me for three months, I think.
Why did they think you were going to get shot now?
I think some information had come across.
Yes.
That I was going to be shot.
What were you doing?
At that time I was working for Fermanagh District Council.
But why?
Fermanagh County Council, I think, at that time. Uh-huh.
Why did you think you were going to be shot?
I was a UDR man as well.
Oh, part-time
UDR. Part-time, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And at that time, I was a very good church goer. I was actually a church warden in Aldermsey Church at the time. And I went to go out to church one Sunday morning. The army had moved out to do road checks. And I went to go out to church and the house was fired on.
By the IRA.
Uh-huh. I don't know, never heard who it was, but it was by the IRA. And then I moved then to Linnaskillen.
Now, where was this house exactly?
Up at Maharvili.
Yes, and so was it...
It was quite close to the border.
Close to the border,
yes,
and was it isolated
It was isolated, yes, uh-huh.
So it was an easy enough...
It was very easy target, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes, a very easy target. So then I moved then to Inniskillen, and for safety, yes.
And where did you live there?
I lived up in a place called Coles Hill, up in a council house up there.
And was there anybody looking after you, guarding you or minding
no,
you?
No, nothing once I moved.
Yeah.
There was nothing more then.
Yeah. So you were on your own now?
I was on my own then.
Were you married?
I was married at that time, yes.
And what was your wife's name?
Winifred.
Winifred?
Uh-huh, Winnie.
And is she still alive now?
She is, yes, uh-huh.
What was her maiden name?
She was Kirkpatrick.
Was she from your local?
She was from Fimaltown.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh, so she was.
And did you have children?
We had three children, two girls and a boy.
And they were in the house too?
They were, aye. They were in the house.
Were they in the house when the shots were fired?
Well,
in the first house?
The eldest wee girl actually was coming to church with me. And me and her was just out. I don't know where it happened. We were just out going out to the car.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. No, nothing. There was no shots hit anything. They seemed to be firing very high.
Yeah. But they just were warning shots, maybe?
I think they're only warning shots to get
scare you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because they didn't hit anything or they just shot so for me. So they were. So I moved then to Enniskillen and that was in 1973. I think it was in 1980. Nothing happened then to it, but in the 80s. And I was driving a van. I was a ganger with the district council at that time. And I was driving a van. There was eight of us in the van. And it was a comma walk-through van. One of the big comma vans. And there was a seat across the back behind the driver's side, in the driver's seat and the passenger seat, a seat across there. And there was three men sitting in that. And there was myself and another fella sitting in the passenger seat. And in the back of the van, there was a barra wheeled up between the mudguards come out in the van, in the inside of the van. And there was a barra wheeled up, and there was one fella threw his coat into the barra, and he sat in the barra. And there was two fellas sitting on the mudguard beside him. We're driving down, we're doing a job in a garrison, which is quite close to the border too. And we're driving along the road, and the van was open fire. The front windscreen come in. It was in two halves. My half come in round me, and I drove on. The van had kind of stopped a wee bit, but I got her going again and drove on out of it. Shouted back to the boys, was there anyone heard it? Nobody spoke. Drove on down about a mile and a half and stopped at a wee shop. Run round the corner, hopped out of the van, run round the corner and met the man that owned the shop. He was an aged man, and I asked him had he a phone, and he said he had, and he said come on ahead. Went to the door, and the wife was there, and she said, oh, I can't let you in because your face, you're an awful mess of blood because the windscreen had cut my face. So she says, I'm sorry, I can't let you in. She says, can you not drive on? So I said, no, we can't go any further because the van won't go any further. And
did you check your friends in the back of the van at this stage?
Pardon?
Your friends in the back of the van?
Four of them had jumped out. One was still in the back. I said to him then, can you phone? And he said, right, I'll phone. So I run back to the van. The fella that was sitting directly behind me, he was laying on the floor. The rest of them was out of the van. And I spoke to him and he didn't speak. And I opened his shirt. And there was a massive hole just there in his chest. So I run into the shop and I lifted a couple of dishcloths, actually. They were in plastic. And I brought them out and I pushed them down into it, the hole. And it finished up. He died. So he did. He was a man by the name of Patrick Fee. So he died. And the fella that was sitting in the barra, he got his hand. A bullet hit him here in the wrist.
Yeah.
And it destroyed all these, so it left him with a wee small hand after it.
My goodness.
So I was shot in the shoulder here.
Yeah.
But it only went in there and come out.
Okay.
Didn't touch a bone or anything.
Flesh wound.
Uh-huh. So we're all brought to the hospital, and they let me out that evening again.
Yeah.
Let me out to go to Pat's funeral and that. And that was that incident now.
Okay, so you were a very lucky escape. I mean,
lucky escape.
So there was a lot of fire on the truck, and it hit. It hit the van quite a few times.
Well, there was only actually the windscreen come in, and those three bullet holes in between. The two fellas, believe it or not, were sitting on the seats on that mud yard. The bullet come in between them and didn't touch them. And hit the fella in the hand. That was Navarra.
Amazing. Uh-huh. And the man that got shot then through the chest, what position?
He actually got shot. I was at the inquest afterwards, and he got shot. The bullet actually went into him here.
On his shoulder?
It went in there, just a wee small hole there.
Under his neck?
At his neck. And it was only just like a pencil hole, because I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
And it hit a bone in the back of the throat, and it ricocheted round here and come out a massive big 3-inch diameter hole here.
So that was frightening experience
for you. It was a frightening experience now, and I was very fond of the fellow that was shot. He was Pat Fee.
Yeah.
And him and me had worked together for years.
So what did you do afterwards? I mean, what did you do then?
They took me then into the town hall to work in the town hall. So I worked in the town hall, and I used to drive the official car up to Belfast and to meetings and that with the councillors, and do a bit of cleaning in the town hall and that. I'd done that for about 4 or 5 years, but I didn't like inside. I wanted out all the time.
Of course. And so what councillors did you bring up? Can you recall?
I used to bring up, at that time, it was John Joe McCusker. Hmm. I don't know how you knew him or not. He was a character. And then I used to bring Cecil Noble. Hmm. Was another one. And then Mr. Burns was the...
And would they discuss with you, the what was going on, or did they have, was there a conversation going on in there?
Not just the usual everyday conversation, So that was just the usual.
Yeah, but that was your job. You were to chauffeur them up.
Bring them up and down, and then, as I say, I'd run a bit of cleaning and a bit of security at the town hall as well. Mm. So that.
And that was in...
That was in 70, let us see, it was 78, I think that was in, 78.
So what happened after that then?
Then nothing happened then, everything was quiet then until 1992. And at that time, my wife worked in the hospital, she was a cook in the hospital. And she used to go out to work every morning for 7:30. And actually, it happened to me in February, but in the month of November, I had been warned that this job, actually, when I worked in the town hall, this job dog warden come up, and I applied for it, and I got it, and I had been dog warden from 89 or 87, 88 or something, on to 92. And as I say, the wife worked in the hospital, and I always left the house at 8 o'clock in the morning, but she had to be in for work for 7:30, and she always brought me tea and toast up to bed. And on this particular morning, she brought tea and toast up to me, and I think I must have been out on duty or something the night before, because I fell asleep after I took the tea. I didn't wake until about 8:10.
Mm-hmm.
And once the time I was warned, they gave me a PPW, personal protection weapon, and told me that a dog warden was supposed to be shot in Fermanagh and to be very careful. But after a couple of months, the way you slacking off and nothing happened, and
it was six
months, and I had really left it. But that particular morning, I fell asleep again. I didn't wake until about 8:10. So I jumped up quick, got ready. Always went out to the dogs, feed them out to where I had the dogs' pens at that time. Got ready, was half roads out when I realised, I didn't bring my pistol with me. Sitting at the edge of the bed. But I didn't pass any remarks. I went out and fed the dogs, and I always made it into the town hall for 10 o'clock for tea. So went to the town hall at 10. I was sitting taking tea, and my secretary was sitting on a seat over beside me, or a wee bit away from me, and I could hear her taking this message. And she was a terrible bad person to give you directions of where to go. We should send you the wrong way. So I could hear her taking directions for me to go. And I said over to her, "Is that for me?" And she said, "It is." And I said, "Can you put it through to me?" So she said, "All right." So she put it through to me. This man come on and he said to me, "Did you hear about me wee dog?" I said, "No, I'm sorry, I didn't." And he said, "Oh, I have a wee sheepdog here, and the wee niece was down at the weekend and it bit her in the face. What should I do with it?" So I said to him, "Well, if it was my dog, I wouldn't keep it. I'd get rid of it, because it might do the same." Well, that's what I'm afraid. He said she'd be down maybe once or twice a month, and I'd be afraid of it having a spite at her and maybe doing more damage. He said to me, would you lift it? And I said, "Oh, aye, no problem." So he said, next thing he said to me, "What time could you be down?" I said, "I'm sorry, that's a wee bit of a problem, because I've quite a bit on today, but I'll lift it sometime today." Well, he said, "It's a bit of a problem for me not knowing what time you'd be down, because I live here on my own. I have a few cattle away from home, and I like to go out to give them a wee lock of meal and hay." And he said, "The problem is, I'd need to be here, for I know you have a wee form to get signed." We had a wee form saying that they were giving the dog with their own consent. And he come on about going to feed the cattle and that, and I looked at my watch and I said, "Right, I'm taking tea at the present time. I'll be with you in an hour and a half." So I went into the, got out and went into the van.
Now, were you suspicious at all?
No, not a bit suspicious. It seemed 100% genuine. You know, it definitely did.
Imagine.
And I'd say, at that time, I'd have been worried about going over by Canole, Derlin direction. I don't know why. But down around Balika, I was never worried about that area, because they're always very friendly people. And
yeah,
you know. And at that time, I had moved down to a wee place called Lara, below Enniskillen. And I was going down by the end of the road. So I looked at my watch and I said, "You know, it's 10:30. I'll not make it back for dinner time. I'll go in and get a flask." So I went into the house and I got a flask and got a couple of sandwiches, put them in a box, walked down to the room and lifted the gun. Come out, it was a lovely morning, sun was shining, and I come out, I set the gun down on the passenger seat and took my jacket off and threw it over the top of it.
Yeah.
Went into the van, went right down, your man had given me directions where to go, and I had a good idea of the area. Went down, turned up, went up the lane. There was quite a straight lane up to the house. And halfway up the lane, there was an old shed on the left-hand side, and there was a bar sitting out. And saying, "I'm going to have to get out and move this bar to get by." And then I looked again. No, I said, I might have room to go by without getting out. So I got by the barrow without getting out, but I think it must have been put there. I'm not sure now, but I always thought it was put there because the lane was quite straight, and if I'd have seen something, it might have been fit to put the van into reverse.
Of course.
And back down,
yes,
the lane, and the barrow, I'd have hit the barrow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know now, it was only my own.
But you just drove around it.
So I drove around it and I went up and I turned. You had to go up, the house was sitting, say, there where the thing, and you had to go up and torn down. As I torn down, I looked, and the keys was in the door.
Yeah.
It was an old farmhouse.
Yeah.
And there was like a pantry thing.
Yeah.
And the keys were in the door. So I said to myself, "Oh, great, he's at home. The keys are at the door." And just as I pulled down, one man come running to the driver's door and one to the passenger's door, roaring, "IRA, get out of that effing van. Get out.
Go away." Yes.
And just that, I whipped up the gun quick. And I fired 3 shots out through the passenger's door. Just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And swung round quick. the man that was at the driver's door, he had a gun, but he had it on binder twine across his chest. He was going to pull me out to make sure that I was the right person. I think why they were going to do that was because they had shot a girl down there in mistake. It was her boyfriend they meant to shoot. Yeah. And they got a kind of bad publicity for it. Mm-hmm. So I think they were going to make sure, because there was a fella, Tommy McGuire, used to do my relief for me. Mm. And he had the same type of a van. And I think they were going to make sure that they got the right person, you know. But when he seen me, he run across the street to the corner. I jumped out quick out of the van. And when I jumped out, I looked down the front and there was a massive big field. There's a wee wall and a massive field inside. Now, there's no good in running down that field. I'm going to be shot. And I run round and I lay down just at the front wheel of the van. And I must have fired a couple of shots. There's shots fired at me then. And I must have fired a couple of shots as well. Next thing, somebody fired a shot and it burst at the front wheel just beside my head. It scared the life out of me. You know, the whistle of the air coming out and that. Scared the life out of me. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? Am I going to run for it or what will I do? I said, you know, I'm wasting ammunition. And I had a full magazine, second magazine, but it was my coat. But I didn't think of it at that time. But I said, I'm wasting magazine. I'm going to have to try and take aim shots if I'm going to save myself here. So just that, up at the top of the house, this man come round out of the corner with a rifle to try and get a shot at me. And I took as nice aim as I could and pressed the trigger and nothing happened. I looked like that in like that there and the magazine was empty.
Aye.
So when he seen me pointing the gun at him, he shot back out of the way. And I jumped up quick, the door was open in the van, you had to run round the door, pulled out my coat, pulled the magazine out of my pocket, hit the other magazine off and hit the magazine. Oh no, but as I was doing that, it must have took them a couple of seconds realising what was wrong. So they jumped out. Two of them jumped out over at the top of the house and come running down. And instead of popping down on one knee and shooting me, they come down with the guns and automatic. And they were pebbling my legs. And I hit the magazine on, the following on, and returned fire. And somebody roared, 2, 3 and 4, run for it. And away they went. That was them gone.
My goodness.
So then the problem was, I looked down and the bone was out of my leg here and the trousers were tore. And the two bones seemed, I could see the bones and the blood was spewing out of me. So just that, the old man come out,
yeah,
out of the house, the man that owned the house. And he said to me, are you hurted? And I said, no, I'm not too bad. I said, have you a phone? He says, I have. And I said, well, can you ring and get me help? No, he says, I can't ring because he said they told me that if I rung, that they'd come back and shoot me if I used the phone. But he said, if you could get in, you could ring. And he says, are you horted? And I said, no, I'm not too bad. He says, you are, there's blood running under your boot.
Yeah.
And I thought that you could hop.
Yeah.
But you can't, when your legs broke like that. You're off balance. I couldn't even move. I was just stuck to the ground.
Good.
And I said, would you have a piece of a stick in there? I can't get up. I can't get moved if I had a stick. So we come out, I always remember it was a wee short 2x2.
Yes.
And it was very short. And he come out and he said, would that be any good to you? And I said, no, it's no good to me. And I hit the side of the van, I got up a wee bit, and I got a kind of look into the pantry and I seen a brush.
Yeah.
And I said to him, can you give me the brush? So he said, surely. And he took the brush out and he knocked the head off it. And I said, no, I'll put the head back on it. So he put the head back on and brought me the brush down. Once I got the brush, I've managed into the house. And then when I got in, then the thing was a kind of bleeding and that. I couldn't remember where I was. And I said to him, am I in Balik here? He says, you are. And at that time, you didn't need a code or anything. You could just ring a straight number if you're in that area. So I knew Balik RUC station was 212. And I rung 212 And the sergeant answered it. And he said to me, "Whereabouts are you?" And I told him. And he said, "I have to leave down." He says, "Will you leave down your phone, hang up again?" Because he says, "There's only two phones here. The army's using one, and I want to use the other one, but we'll ring you back." So I said, "Okay." So I left the phone down, and believe it or not, I looked out through the door and I could see the man laying. And that was the first time that I could see him.
What man now is this?
The man that I had fired through the door at.
Oh, you had shot him, yeah.
I could see him laying.
Yeah.
And I started to think, and I said, it's funny the way the mind works, you know. I said to myself, you know, that man's going to go into hospital. He'll get the same care as me. He'll come out and shoot somebody again. Yeah. And I'm going to make sure he doesn't. And believe it or not, I got the brush again. I come out through the door and I was going to actually go over beside him, put three shots into his head. That's what the way it determined the way the mind was working. Yeah. And make sure that he didn't get. And I got out a wee bit and I took fear. And thank goodness I turned and walked back in again.
Yeah.
I just took pure fear. I wouldn't for the world touch him or anything, because he was masked and all. And I just took that fear and thank the Lord I didn't do what I was intended to do.
That's a very interesting point you're making, that you, under your extreme condition, stress, and what was running through your mind, I suppose, was these people were trying to kill me, and now there's one dying outside. I'll finish him off.
That was my idea.
Imagine.
But thank goodness I didn't, because I don't know what way it would have went in court if I'd have done that, you know.
Did he survive?
No, he died.
Oh, he was dead.
He was dead.
Okay.
I had fired the three shots out through the door. One hit him there, just one there, and one straight through the heart.
Okay.
You know, whatever way I was bringing up
the gun. Imagine. Did that play in your mind, your conscience?
Then the next thing happened was the helicopter come. They rung me back then from Billig station. I was talking to the police, a policeman in the station. He was keeping me talking. And just, I looked out through the window. There was a wee window. And I could see a man coming running back up again. One of them. He was, and I mind trying to even press the trigger of the gun, and I said, no, if he comes up and comes in, I'll just lay and let him shoot away at me. You know, the adrenaline was gone. I couldn't even feel the trigger of the gun. I said, now if he comes in, I'll just let him shoot away. And but he came up and he went up to your man. I think he must have took the gun off him, because there was no gun got on him.
Yeah.
And I see him jumping back out over the wall again, away again. And then the helicopter come.
They didn't try to pull him away or anything?
No, he done nothing, only he just must have took his gun.
Right. Do you know what that man's name is? Or do you know anything about him afterwards?
The man?
I
heard afterwards he was McManus.
Yeah.
His father is actually a Sinn Féin councillor.
Yeah.
In Sligo.
Yeah.
So he was McManus. So he was.
Okay.
And then the helicopter come then, and it dropped off me, and away it went again. Of course, I was shouting over the phone that why are they not coming to take me away?
Because you were bleeding badly.
I was bleeding very badly at the time. And I could hear the army calling the helicopter again. What they were going to do was drop their head men in the helicopter whenever the word come through, and they diverted them out. And they were going to drop them off, and were going back to Angelo to get an medic officer to come out. But I could hear them, the army calling them and saying, this man's in a bad condition, get back and get him lifted. So they came back and lifted, and the young fella came in to carry me out. He came in, he was a very youngish lad. He had been in the back of the helicopter. And he said to me, can you walk? And I said, no. And he said, I'm going to carry you. Well, he says, I'm going to hurt you. But he said, once I get you on my shoulder, I'll not let you go until you come out. But the funny part of it was, I handed him the gun. And I said to him, there's a man lying on the street. If he moves, I want you to put three shots. I'd still list three shots in my head. Three shots into him. because the young lad came to see me in the hospital afterwards. He said to me, what would have happened if that man would have moved? He says, I couldn't have put three shots into him. And I said, well, I'd have put three into you. You know, I was only funning them. But then they took me.
He actually came up to the hospital afterwards.
The young lad came to the hospital to see me.
This is the young lad that was attacked you?
No, this is the young lad that carried me out. Sorry. I know you've got to.
And this man carried you out, and he was the man who owned the house, was he?
No. He was the young lad out of the helicopter.
Oh, that came down to
pick you
up.
That came down to pick me up. He carried me out and put me into the helicopter.
And that's what saved you your life, you know, because they flew you off to...
That's right. And they flew me off then to hospital and...
What was the damage?
It was the fibula and them two bones there.
Yeah,
were completely broken.
Now, did that leave after marks in your leg? Are you okay now? Are you able to walk properly?
I feel a wee bit of pain now and then. Not too bad. A wee bit of pain now, but
do you consider yourself lucky?
I learned to live with it. I did. I'm very lucky. Yeah. Very lucky to be alive.
Imagine
somebody looking down on me.
And so, did you continue with your duties, or did you? What did you do afterwards?
No, after that, then I was brought to Belfast up to the Royal, and I was in the Royal for 3 weeks, and then they moved me over to Musgrave, to the military wing in Musgrave, and I was there for 9 months. Yeah. So I was, and when I was 12 months or a little over 11 months out, my personnel manager rang me up. He said to me, Eric, he said, I want to come down to see you. And I said, that's no problem. And he came down to see me and he said to me, when would I be fit to come back to work? And I said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you, but I said, I'm attending Colonel Shepherd. Was the man that was up in the hospital. I was attending him. And I said, I can give you his name and address and let you ring him. Maybe he can tell you. But I said, I'm attending him once a month at the present time.
Yeah.
And he said, no, he said, there'd be no need to do that, but they would be putting me in front of a doctor. Right? So a couple of week or so later, they rang me up and told me, would I go to Dungannon? Up to a doctor, to see a doctor up there. So I went up and he examined me. He didn't say anything. That was on a Saturday. On the following Monday week, I got a phone call from the personnel manager again, telling me that, he says, I'm sure you're anxious to know what happened. And I said, I am. He says, you're finished with us last Friday.
Oh, I see. Yes. And so that was your last day.
I nearly fell through the chair when he told me,
because
I was so sure, you know, that I was getting back. And it was so funny because Mr. Burns had been up at the hospital the time when I was reported, because I have a wee cutting out of the paper even yet. And he said that some of the reporters asked him about a job for me, and he said there'd always be a job for me, that you don't work 38 years with a firm without a job for you. It'll always be a job for me.
Yeah.
But that's the way, after 38 years, they rung me on the Monday, telling me I was finished on Friday.
I see.
I was a bit annoyed about that now.
Well, of course you were. I mean, you were still a young man at that stage.
Well, I'd have been, what? That was 92.
Yeah.
So about 49
and they retired you at that stage.
That's right.
And you never worked a day
after that.
I suppose there are a couple of things. Were you completely, there was a lot of talk about it at that particular time. People, you know, it was all newspapers that you were shot and all of that incident. Then it just... Did it just fade away?
Oh, it just faded away, yes,
And you didn't get any kind of proper recognition after that, or...?
Well, I did. I got a DCM.
Oh, did you?
Yes,
And that was... awarded through the
yeah. army to me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Distinguished Conduct Medal.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that was some recognition, I suppose.
Oh, it was. Yeah. It was nice to, yeah. because it was actually a private meeting with the Queen.
And what did the Queen say to you?
Well, she was very, very nice, actually. She had to come in and do the official thing. There was nobody there, only the wife and me. So she had to come in and do the official thing, you know. But once she had that done, she just lifted the handbag and threw it on the table and she said, have a seat. There was a big settee. And we sat down and she sat down between us. And she just chatted to us for about 10 minutes, just like a mother. Yeah. The wife said she was just like a mother. She asked, how would you move house? And the family, yeah. how was the family and all that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
It was very nice.
But it was lovely that happened.
That's
you
right.
Know, that,
uh-huh.
Oh, it you was had that uh-huh. Private meeting.
Well, you see, I had the time that Pat Fee was injured, I got a QGM that time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't private. It was those 100 and something others, you know.
People
you around the circle.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
How do you feel about the because it was the IRA. I mean, they were the people who had shot you.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
That organization. Mm-hmm. Did you think that they were local people? Did you think they were people who came up from the south and did this,
they were all caught, do you see?
Oh, they were all caught?
Yes, they were all caught. The guards caught them.
Okay, and they were sentenced, were they sentenced?
They went to, there was court in Dublin. I was summoned as a witness to it, right?
Yeah.
And one of them, the local fella, he was McGee, was the local fella.
He from up, one, up around here?
He comes from Ballycackley, yeah. down that direction.
Yeah.
He, whatever happened, why, I don't know. When they arrested the three of them, when they caught the three of them, right, and arrested them, they questioned him, they let him out the next day. Right?
Why did they let them out?
Well,
let him out?
I queried it, funny, with the head of the guards up in Dublin. And they said to me, but they seemed to say that whenever they arrested them, they went out, they knew where there was three actually dumps, right, arms dumps, head. And they went out and lifted one and put a big lot of publicity about it in the papers. And then they let them out and they thought that the IRA would have done their dirty work. This was told to me now.
Yeah, imagine.
And it didn't happen. He went away to America, right?
Yeah.
The two was tried in Dublin. The other two was tried in Dublin. And they got 13 years each. Mm. Right? Then 12 months later, there was a guard in a pub about Dublin, somewhere out or another, that had been down about this area. And who was in the pub? One of McGee.
Yeah.
So he got in touch with the guard and they lifted him.
Yeah.
And then there was another court case on him and he was sentenced to 12 years.
Yes.
But once the Good Friday Agreement come in, they got out that evening.
How do you feel about the fact that they got out that evening?
I was annoyed because that I had put in a terrible time in court.
Mm.
Right, an awful time in court because they had, especially them two fellas, they had two of the best barristers they could have. And I was in the witness box for 3.5 days on crutches. And I'll tell you, I wasn't in good, you know, and that was just one question. One of them would get up and question you for 20 minutes or half an hour and he'd sit down and then another one. And they were bringing it out that there were joyriders, that they wanted the van, and that I fired on them and they had a return fire to save their own lives. That's what it was brought out as. That's what they were bringing it out. And there was wee things, you know, that happened. It learns me a lesson, you know, never to give a statement when you're not well to police or anything. The police come up to me in hospital and me not in good condition, and whether or not to take a statement of me. Well, then whenever I come home from hospital, they come down and read the statement to me. And there's wee things I said in the statement, like, a man come running out of a turf shed, right? Well, I couldn't be sure whether that was a turf shed. To me, it was an outslatted house, which most likely was a turf shed. But I couldn't be sure, and I said to the police, you know, I couldn't be sure that's a turf shed, that man come running out. And they said, oh, don't worry about it. And they marked it out and put in a shed just above it, right? And there were several wee things, you know, that I had said whenever I thought about it. I couldn't be sure of it.
But you can imagine,
the first day that I was in court, that evening, one of the barristers requested the handwritten statement to be brought in court for the next day.
Yeah.
And then he put all these questions to me. Why did you change your mind? It's not hard to know. The police told you there's no turf in that shed. You know, that's what they were bringing out. Wee things like that.
But tell me, were you uncomfortable at the fact that the court case was held in Dublin instead of up here? Did you, because...
Well, I was very well guarded.
Yeah, but at the same, but you were in a different area.
I wasn't comfortable now, but I was there.
Why was the court case held in Dublin?
Because they were caught in Dublin, or they were caught in the south.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh.
And do you think, though, that, you know, that the fact that they were released because of the Good Friday Agreement, they were back out on the street again? I mean, that... Have you ever met them? You know them.
Funny enough, it must be nearly 12 months ago, there was a new wee restaurant opened down in the shopping centre in Enniskillen. And I went up to it, me and the wife went in one Saturday. And who was sitting in a seat just behind me, Ony McGee. And he stared me, and I stared him back. And only the wife was with me. I'd have went over to him and said to him, you know, what did I overdo on you?
Yeah.
You know, but the wife was with me, and I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But I was really boiling. I would have definitely went over and said to him.
Of course.
You know, but...
Do you know what? Yeah, you know, when you just think about it, you're both people that come from the same area, same location. Could I call you Irish? You're Irish. You're both Irish.
That's right. Who are I?
And there, you were both trying. He was trying to kill you, and you were obviously in self-defense. You were trying to kill him.
That's right.
It was just amazing, wasn't it?
The other two fellas actually come from Coal Island.
Yeah.
In Northern Ireland here. Yeah. But they live down in Sligo.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think now that things have calmed down a little bit, or do you think that there's still tension there, you know, if you just scratch the surface?
I would think they'd have calmed down a lot, you know. I wouldn't go to Sligo. Because I know them two fellas is living down there. And I wouldn't like to go to Sligo, but I'd go down the way down the south, you know.
Yeah, and it wouldn't trouble you?
No, it doesn't trouble me now at all, no.
Yeah.
No.
And the fact that you were attacked and you were in such a horrible situation. That you can accept this now and you can live with it. And
you have to.
And if there were a group of people brought together and you were in that group and they were there, would that trouble you?
Oh, that would annoy me now. Oh, yes. Funny enough, I've been asked that question. If them three men come up to the house and said that they were sorry for what they'd done, I couldn't. I would never. Now, maybe it's not right, but I couldn't forgive them now.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way. I've heard people saying they could forgive them, but I couldn't now.
Do you consider yourself an innocent victim of the violence?
Yeah, of course.
Do you think, though, that, you know, kind of that other innocent victims of the violence, say, that came from the south side of the border, and do you think that a group of you coming all together would be a good thing.
I think as long as we're innocent people, yeah. As long as we're innocent people, yes. But now the lack of them three that was at me now, I would could not sit, stay in the same place as them now. I'd boil, you know.
Of course.
No two ways. Yeah. And there's no two ways about it. I would.
Yeah.
I'd no book. It's not right, I suppose. I suppose you should forgive them. But I can't. I couldn't bear in my heart to. No.
And Eric, do you think? Can you sleep at night now? Do you have recurring dreams? Or do
not
you
too bad now? I had them for now for a long, long time. I had an awful thing. You know, even for a long time, I would hardly go to church because of, you know, this. Thou shalt not kill. I killed somebody. You know, I still have that in my head that I shot somebody. You know, when you're not supposed to shoot anyone or you're not supposed to kill. But I know, even though it's preached to me that it was self-defence, what could you do if it was you or them? You know, but still I'd have that in my mind that I still shot somebody's son, which is an awful thing, I think. You know, even in self-defence.
But you were lucky you came out alive yourself. I mean, there was a whole lot of firing going on, and you know, kind of that if one proper shot was taken, you were dead.
Oh, I was dead. I think there was 123 empty cases picked up, so there was a lot of shooting. So that was, you know, the whole thing didn't last that long. I wouldn't think it seemed a long time, but it wouldn't have.
It's an amazing story, absolutely. And we're here in a place called Seth, you know, which is in Listeniski, and they're doing so much marvelous work here. And as you know, they are so good. But it's important to give a voice to the people who were actually targeted and.
Oh, it's very important.
Damaged by this terrible trouble.
I don't care which side they're on, you know, anyone that has lost somebody, it's terrible, I think. No, it's terrible.
Your wife, after this happened, you know, she must have been worried about you and under great stress as well. So she came to hospital to see you.
She worked in the hospital, so they brought her around to see me, and the surgeon that was dealing with me said to her he would let her see me from the waist up, but he wouldn't let her see me legs and that. And he told her that it wasn't life threatening. No, he told her that. And whenever she came in to see me, she said, "Thank God Eric didn't die," but she says the hair was standing straight up on his head with pure fright. She said the fright in my face, she couldn't believe it. So she couldn't.
My goodness. And you shot that man with a pistol. You were a good shot.
I was a good shot. I was always a good shot. So I always done a lot of shooting. A couple of double barrel guns, and I done a lot of shooting. But from that day to now, I have never fired a shot. Because the way I look at it is, I was fighting for my life. And something you're going to shoot is bound to be fighting for his life as well. You know, so I never fired a shot from that day.
That honour that was bestowed on you, were you the only person to get that?
I was the only one in the Royal Irish to get that award. I'm the only one that has it. I'm the highest decorated soldier in the Royal Irish. So yeah, at the present time.
And that's
an honour for me.
Yes, indeed. That's a great honour.
Yes,
Eric Glass, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for giving me your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Eric, just when you fired the shot and you killed that boy, you know, I'll put that in a different way. So when you fired the shot and the person that you were firing at, who was trying to kill you, died. How did you feel about that?
at the time, I felt very angry with him. Now, at the time. But then whenever I went into hospital and started to think about it, I had a son the same age as him. And if you have a son the same age, he's still a child. He's still a child. And I started to think that I had shot somebody's child and that he went home dead to that house, and was, what was the father and mother thinking? And funny enough, somebody, a week or so later, somebody come up to see me in hospital and they brought me a paper. I think it was some of the Sligo papers now, I can't remember the name. But they brought me a paper, and in it they'd interviewed the father, and he said that they were proud that he had died for Ireland, and that he had joined the juniors and then moved into the seniors. And I read that over and over again, and that, it kind of cleared my conscience a little bit.
In what way now?
Well, I knew that he, sorry about that, I have a habit of doing that, but I knew that they knew that it was involved. Yeah. And that kind of cleared it, you know, that he really had left home to shoot me. And that kind of helped me in some way. I read the paper over and over, and it helped me some way. I don't know what way, but it helped me to know that they knew that he was involved.
So, the court case in Dublin, you had to go down and testify. How did that go for you?
That was very tough, that couple of days in Dublin. Very, very tough. I was actually in the witness box for 3.5 days on crutches. The witness box, and there was two barristers there, and they questioned me for, one of them get up and question you for a half an hour, and then he'd sit down and the other man would get up and question you again. That was very difficult. So it was.
And so in that length of time, they were obviously trying to establish the fact that that maybe you shouldn't have carried out this. Is it, what was going through your mind during that court case?
They actually were bringing it out that they were joyriders, and that they were only come for the van, and they had a return fire because I fired on them. That was the what they were actually bringing it out as. The two barristers.
But did you stand fast? I mean, did you let this get to you?
No, I stood my ground, you know, I kept to my story. The only thing that happened to me was on the last day, the barrister, the older barrister, got up and he put the two hands into the jacket that they wear, and he swung about a couple of minutes, and he said to me, you know, he said, Mr. Glass, my heart goes out to you. He said, you're in a wee box there, this is your fourth day, on your own crutches. And he says, my heart really goes out to you, but he said, I do believe you have such an innocent face, but I do believe you're a goddamned liar.
Yeah.
And that was the words he said to me. Just so that the three judges got up and said that that was out of order.
Was there any kind of crowd outside the courthouse that, was there any kind of demonstration, or did they know you were there, or can you recall that?
I don't think there was anyone. I'm not sure now. They brought us in by car very fast into where it was, you know.
Yeah. But there was no sympathisers of the
IRA.
No,
I don't think so, no. No, there was a few in the gallery now in the court.
And were they, did you hear noises coming from the gallery?
Not very much noise now. Whenever I went in now into the courtroom, they got up and the guards pulled them back down again, made them sit down again.
Yeah.
To get a good look at me, they got up to, well, I don't know what the idea was, but they got up, and I remember the guards pulling them back down again into the seat because they were handcuffed to guards, you know.
And were you satisfied with the court case? going away? Were you satisfied with the result?
I was satisfied with the result, but I was very I was very annoyed about the police barrister. It should have been on my side. He never got up and said that they were doing anything wrong. You know, we never got up and re-questioned them. He went through it at the start with me.
Yeah.
But after that, he never said anything more. You know, we never. I thought there was times that he should have got up and said that.
Yeah.
Different things were out of order that they were asking me.
Yeah.
No, which he didn't.
Eric, listen, thank you very much. You've given me so much of your time, and I appreciate it very much.